Hi, Ruby Ryder here. Welcome to Pegging Paradise podcast number 196 on April 24th, 2018. Changing the world one ass at a time. If you enjoy and appreciate my work and you want to help me spread the word about pegging, consider becoming a patron of mine so that I can spend more time doing podcasts, answering questions, writing articles, and recording videos for people interested in pegging everywhere. Just go to patreon.com/rubyrider or you can click the Support My Work button on the right-hand side of my website. And remember, there is a carefully curated selection of luxury, body-safe, non-toxic toys, which can be purchased from the Little Black Dress of Pleasure products, Entice Me. Just go to enticeme.com, #RubyRider, and be sure to use that coupon code RIDER for 15% off of your entire purchase. That's RYDER. You will be supporting Pegging Paradise with every purchase that you make. Hello, everyone. Here we are at podcast number 196. I am feeling much better, más mejor. And thank you for all of your wonderful messages and letters and things. I tell you, it's not easy to ask for help. But I really encourage you all out there that when you need reassurance, when you need somebody to just maybe whatever you need them to do, to listen, to tell you that you're great in the ways that you are or what have you, ask for help. Ask for what you need for. It's easy to think that you can just sort of buck up and deal. And it's tempting to do that because it's a vulnerable thing to ask for help. But it's so rewarding and it's so connecting. I tell you, reading your messages, I was in tears a number of times. I'm not sure what to do with them all. They're so amazing. Some of them I'm going to print out and put on the wall in back of where I work in my room. That's what I do. I take inspirational things and print them out and stick them on the wall to remind myself of certain messages. And so many of your letters were so amazing. The other thing I'm thinking about doing is to create an area on my blog that's called testimonials, because it's a cool thing for other people who are just finding pegging to read and hear about how much this has changed their life. And I know that they were meant for me, and it's like, what I brought to the world has really helped people, but it's still a really good message for people who are searching to not, look at me and go, wow, she's so great, but to look at what I put out there and to say, hey, this might be able to help me, because so many of you talked about all the different ways that what I put out there helps you. And that was just, I was in tears a number of times. In fact, I was talking to my sister on the phone and I was telling her that I'd been a bit down and melancholy and what I had done about it. And I read a couple of them to her. And she said, are you crying? Because I am. So thank you, thank you, thank you, all of you, so much for that. It really made a difference. I kind of blobbed out and didn't do a whole lot. I watched TV. I ate whatever I wanted. I drank whatever I wanted. And I just took it easy and took a deep breath. And I feel much, much better. For those of you who are my patrons, you saw the picture of me this morning. It was kind of wild. They have a thing on Patreon that's very much like the stories on Facebook, where it's just sort of a little recording thing that you get to see. It's a little glimpse, if you will. And on Patreon, they call it Lens. So I got up this morning and my hair was wild and all over the place. And literally last night, everybody, I slept 12 hours. It was freaking amazing. Usually I can't sleep that long. Usually after about 8 or 9 hours, I'm kind of dreaming really vividly and I, awake and asleep and awake and asleep to the point where it's not worth it to stay in bed anymore. But I slept solid for 12 hours, got up, got myself an iced coffee and took a picture of myself and put it up on Lens. Lens is something that doesn't stay forever because I didn't want that picture to stay forever. It was kind of wild. The no makeup, hair everywhere, just got out of bed look. See what you get when you're a patron? You get to see weird pictures of Ruby like that. Oh my goodness. Okay. So once again, thank you. I am back in the saddle, so to speak, back in front of the microphone, and here we go with podcast number 196. And the very first thing we're going to do is a Patreon update.
Yes.
Mimi pledged $5 a month. Mimi, thank you so much for your generous pledge. I really appreciate your support very, very much. Okay, the next thing I want to do is read a couple of really choice quotes from the chat. The chat comes and goes, and you know, the people on the chat, the 24/7 chat that goes with being a patron, those were the ones that knew something was up first, because I just kind of let them know, hey, you know, I'm down here. I'm going to take some time out. And they were really sweet about it. It's not like anybody demands my presence there, but I do like to check in pretty regularly. But before that, before I told everybody, hey, you know, I'm not feeling so well, I'm going to take some time, I copied a couple of things that were said in the chat that were just extraordinary. And I want, they don't have anything to do with each other, but as standalones, they're pretty remarkable. The first one was made as a comment to what society does to our men in expecting them not to have emotions and all that stuff that I've talked about before. Responsibilities heaped upon men by society's norms are crippling and cumulative. Wow, that is so well said. So well said. Crippling and cumulative. No kidding. That one just really struck me. And this one is very fun. And like I said, has nothing to do with the first one. We were talking about, as you can imagine, all kinds of things in the chat, and this came out. Moaning boys in frilly panties are like chicken soup for my kinky soul. Right? And I did not say that, everybody, okay? I just went, man, can I use that on the podcast? So yeah, it's pretty cool. So if that isn't an advertisement for the chat, I don't know what it is. All right. Let's get on to your letters. This one came to me over FetLife, and let me read you the first message that this guy sent me. Why is it that it feels like femdom individuals use men more than female dominance? I've had more bad experiences with femdoms than I ever had with female dominance. I'm just trying to figure out if I'm doing something wrong, or is this something that is not just general to my area? Because fem is commonly used as an acronym. I feel like anyone who identifies under it tends to treat men that way, regardless of any negotiations. I've tried to negotiate, but apparently I'm doing it wrong. Any and all advice would be greatly appreciated. So this is like relationship stuff, you know, the dominant submissive type of relationship stuff that people talk about on FetLife. And here was my response. Who cares what they label themselves as? Just preserve your self-respect and keep a close eye on whether they are treating you as an equal until you have negotiated a dominant submissive dynamic and whether they stick to the agreements made in those negotiations. Some people, not just women, use the DS dynamic as an excuse to be abusive, whether verbally or physically. Just walk away from those people and forget them. Sweeping generalizations won't help you. And his response was this. Why not? If it's more than just one or two, and more like a whole group of people, it's the mentality of the whole group of women under the femdom heading. So I responded again. If this is a group of women in your area and they identify themselves as whichever term and they espouse the belief that all men are inferior to women and deserve to be treated as less than it applies because that's what that group believes and they are in the group. I left a female-dominant group exactly for that reason. It wasn't aligned with my beliefs of equality. But to say that all women who call themselves femdom are more abusive towards men than women who call themselves female dominance is ridiculous on the face of it. And then I added on to that. I'm done here. I'm not up for a debate. I have work to do. Because this particular individual and I have crossed paths before on private messages, and he does seem to be always looking for a debate and kind of looking to argue. He's kind of a frustrating person. And he ignored me and wrote again, and I blocked him. Here's what he said. Thanks. It's a national level of people. So what do you do about that? FEM is an acronym meaning female enslaving men. Most times you run across the term femdom, you run into enslaving terms. I'm just going by how I've been treated by women under that term, regardless of the local area they are in. So I kind of have a short fuse today, and I blocked the guy because I get really frustrated when people don't listen, and I say I'm done here, and then they write again. So, but I thought I would bring this up and talk about it on the podcast for a couple of reasons. One is I want to talk about labels a little bit. Labels and generalizations tend to divide and separate people. They can be helpful to a certain degree in the beginning. They can be helpful to give someone an idea about a small part of yourself, but beyond that beginning, what you really need to do is to ask questions. In his situation, just keeping your wits about you and your sense of self-worth, you talk with the people you engage with and see if they show signs of treating you as less than because of your gender. If they do, you pay attention and you walk away, especially if they treat you this way before you've negotiated a dominant-submissive dynamic. There are people who are more into fantasy than reality, and they can come from both sides of that dynamic. Perhaps they've immersed themselves in reading all kinds of things, online things, and never done anything in person. And they haven't read anything about how to build a real relationship like that. And so they think that you just sort of drop into one. I get letters from guys saying, "Oh, goddess, I kiss your feet and I will do anything you want." It's like, I am not your goddess. You can't touch my feet. I don't fucking know you. And we don't have any kind of a dominant submissive dynamic. And so this is what I mean. It goes in the opposite direction too. Submissive men have women write to them and say, "You will obey my every command." And I tell the submissive guys, tell those women to fuck off. Mostly I tell them that because my belief, my very strong belief, is to build a healthy dominant submissive relationship from the start. You need to be equals. You need to talk as equals. You need to meet as equals. You need to negotiate and talk a long time about what type of dominant submissive dynamic you want, and negotiate that to the point where you then have an agreement. And only then, if it is allowed in the agreement, would the dominant person be okay treating the submissive person as less than, if that's something you like, if it's something you want, if it's something you agreed upon. Starting that way right out of the gate without any kind of an agreement is ridiculous, and it doesn't do anything to build a healthy DS relationship. The other thing that labels and sweeping generalizations about labels might cause to happen is it might cause you to have a missed opportunity. I have honestly never heard that FEM was an acronym for female enslaving men. And unless that first word is plural, you can take it the opposite direction. Female enslaving men. That sounds like men who enslave females. But if it's plural, females enslaving men, then I suppose the acronym would work. Nonetheless, never heard of this acronym ever. For me, it's always been a shorthand for female, femme, femdom, okay? Now, I may be out of the loop in terms of acronyms. I don't know. People make all kinds of stuff up. But moving on to the point about passing up an opportunity, you may have these stereotypes, these generalizations about labels, and decide not to ask the questions. And someone like me could say, "Yeah, I'm a femdom, absolutely." And you could walk right by me and not know that I don't think the way this man is describing he thinks all femdom-identified women do. So, yes, labels and generalizations and stereotypes, not so good. Here's another example of that that is more applicable to the pegging thing and stuff that we talk about a lot on this podcast. It is not unusual in a pegging relationship for the man to want his partner to be dominant, okay? To dominate the scene, to be dominant. So what does that mean? There is no one definition of dominant, and I've talked about this before. You can't come to your partner and say, I want you to be more dominant with me. I want you to, you know, dominate me. And expect them to know what you mean by dominant. That's a label. Okay, so the minimum that she knows at that point is that she in some way needs to take control. But however that manifests and what you are envisioning and fantasizing about and what you want is a question that needs to be asked. Then you sit down and you talk about it. Dominate you. Okay, well, that sounds interesting. Sit with me and talk to me about what you fantasize about. What does it look like? What do I do? What do I say? How does this work? Well, how do you want to feel? And, you know, tell me all about it so that I can understand this better, as opposed to dominate me. Got it. Hey, you know, I don't like that dominant stuff. I've watched the pegging, you know, porn and the women dominating the men, and that's disgusting. I don't like that. I'm not doing it. See what I mean? Missed opportunity. Stereotypes and generalizations happen for a reason. They exist because it is common to find the thing that there's a stereotype about and you generalize about. However, labels are just a beginning. Please look at them as just a beginning. They are a beginning at which point you are setting down a path. And you are right at the beginning of that path, and you've been given the path, but you don't know where it leads, and you don't know which branches that you might need to take, and you don't know anything yet. You just know the beginning of the path, so you need to ask the questions when stuff like this happens. Labels are labels, and then ask questions. Labels give you a hint, and then you need to get curious and talk to your partner about all the different things that they connect with that label so you can really understand it. So you guys are on the same page. Boom, boom. So that all got spurred off by an exchange I had with the frustrating person on VetLife, but I wanted to share that with you because it's a really important thing for relationships. Very, very important. And I wanted to read you guys something that not all of you may have seen, because I know some of you just listen to the podcast and you don't really follow me anywhere else, which is fine. Everybody does what works for them. But I wrote a piece called The Introductory Letter, A Lost Art. And the reason I want to read it to you now is because I want the people on the podcast to hear it if they don't follow me on, I think I posted it on my blog and Patreon and FetLife, all three, I'm pretty sure I did. But the people that just listened to the podcast, let me read that for you, because there are so many people looking for people. And, you know, since last week and my non-podcast, you know that I, too, am looking for someone. A lot of single people out there looking for partners. So The Introductory Letter, A Lost Art. Actually, now that I have it in front of me, it's slightly different. The Letter of Introduction, A Lost Art. Okay, here we go. Clicking to open the new message, I confess I don't have much hope. So much time has passed since I've received a decent letter of introduction that it's hard to remember the thrill of a well-crafted missive. Many of the messages I receive are questions about pegging, equipment, or talking to a partner about pegging. I don't mind those at all. That's what I do. Spread the word about pegging and answer questions. I'm a sex educator, so I don't care much how those are written as long as they are understandable. But I am also a single sex educator, so I do scan the gender and location of the senders when viewing my messages. Sometimes I even open messages from local males first because, yes, I would love to have a partner in crime in this wild life I've created for myself. If it is a message meant for me personally and not a question, all too often I get something akin to this. Subject line. Hi, I'm Paul, CD, and this is an acronym for crossdresser. Message body. May I serve you? That's it. Nothing in the profile about who they are, what they like, what they're looking for, what thrills them, or what leaves them cold. No indication that they saw anything on my profile, much less read it. No pictures. People, you can do better than this. I know that looking for a partner to play with or a life partner can be a frustrating business, to be sure. I've heard male-identified types say that when they take the time to create that well-crafted message to female-identified types, it doesn't increase their chances, so why waste the time? What they mean is that they still got rejected, even with making an effort to write a good message. The immediate assumption there is that the message didn't work magic like they hoped it would when they took the time to create it. In reality, they could have been rejected for a number of reasons, despite the well-crafted message, reasons that have nothing to do with the sender. Bad timing in life, started dating someone else, deal breaker on the fetish list, bad mood, sick, dog died, etc. Viewing the message as a failure because it didn't produce the desired result is choosing to ignore a multitude of other factors and take it personally instead. Personally, I consider a well-crafted letter of introduction a victory in and of itself. To craft one, you must pause the insane pace of life for a moment and put some words together that mean something to you. You offer those words to the recipient and you hope for the best. If there is sincerity in one search, why not put forth a sincere effort in your first message? Certainly, time is precious. But when seeking out another human being to be intimate with, perhaps that is the time to take the time and give it your best. It doesn't even have to be that complicated. First, you must have a decent profile, because what is the point of a stellar letter of introduction if the object of your attentions then finds nothing more? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say the prevalent attitude is that if senders can't take the time to create a profile and send a decent message, that says a lot about how much effort they're willing to expend on the possible connection, too. And now, let me give you a quick guide to a letter of introduction. 1. Tell them briefly who you are. Hello, I'm Ruby Ryder, 60 years old, 5'11", 195 pounds, and presently single. I identify as a non-monogamous, sensual, dominant sadist. 2. Say something about their profile that is not blatantly sexual. I perused your profile and photos and appreciate that you have some serious experience in BDSM. I'm a movie buff too, and I must say, as a writer, I appreciate a well-written profile. Yours was a pleasure to read. 3. Tell them what you're looking for. I seek a regular and reasonably local play partner for some mutually pleasurable explorations. 4. Wrap it up. Please feel free to peruse my profile and let me know if you're interested. Thanks for your time. Yours, Ruby. That's it. It doesn't have to be 5 pages of soul-searching or cajoling. Just be polite, forthcoming, honest, and use your spell check. Never use text speak. Never mention how much you'd like to blank with them from their kink list, because that's rude. You don't even know this person yet. Even if there is a list of what kinks they enjoy, it's too soon to mention them. If you do, the message it sends is that you're more interested in the specific kink than you are the person you just wrote to. Feels like being approached as a fetish delivery service. That's not a good feeling. That's all there is to it, people. Seriously. Now go forth and send some awesome introductory messages. Good luck. So I wanted to read you that because I know there's a bunch of you out there looking, and I know that there's a bunch of guys looking for women who peg, and so that is a little bit of advice on how to approach people on the internet when you write letters to them. And I know that you're not going to get a fetish list all the time. That's only on FetLife, but you get the idea. I am also going to put in the Linkorama a link to a slideshow that has some really good information about how to create a decent profile and how to write that introductory letter that's slightly different than what I told you. It is made by Cunning Minx, who is the queen of polyamory. She does Polyamory Weekly podcast. It's an amazing podcast, and she's like a number 500 and something, right? This woman has been doing this polyamory podcast for a long time. And she made this little slideshow called How Not to Be a Douche on FetLife. I probably have mentioned before on the podcast, I've done so many podcasts, it's kind of funny because I forget what I've mentioned. But I'm going to put a link to that in the Linkorama because that has some good information too. You just want to give a sense of who you are, and you want to take a little bit of time and let them know you did read your profile, share something about yourself, and boom, you're done. So that link is going to be in the Linkorama for everybody who is interested, and good luck in your search. Okay, I'm still going to talk to you a little bit here more about another thing. I've talked before in the politics section a couple of podcasts back about politics, that bill that passed in the United States called SESTA-FOSTA. So, the SESTA-FOSTA bill is having some interesting fallout, not just in the United States, but actually around the world, because online places are shutting down things in fear of being held liable because of the terms of this bill. And it's really kind of fucking over sex educators. Let me give you an example of what happened to me. When I do my webinars, which are still going fabulously, by the way, I use Eventbrite. It's an event ticketing platform that works really well in conjunction with the Zoom platform that I do the webinar on, right? So I've kind of gotten used to receiving these at this point. After the SESTA-FOSTA bill passed, people started sending out new terms of use. And even before the idiot who runs the country signed the bill, people were sending these out. And by people, Microsoft updated its terms of use. Google updated its terms of use. And yesterday morning, I got one from Eventbrite. And Eventbrite basically changed their terms of use to prohibit transactions which involve any adult-related material or activities. Let that sink in. Any. So pretty much, sex educators are fucking screwed. Well, we're all on Facebook together, and we help each other and support each other. And when I posted this, somebody said, yeah, well, you might want to sign up with SparkSo. SparkSo. SparkSo is a ticketing platform that has specifically said they are very friendly to sex educators. And they don't use PayPal, which is a pretty censoring type of payment processor. They use Stripe. So I decided to make the switch over, and it's just a lot of work. It's a lot of work. There's all kinds of settings. You have to get it just right. You have to make sure that all the settings are just right when you do those webinars. And then once you do that, once you can clone the activity and do it again. And they do have all the bells and whistles that you need, but it was just a fuck ton of work, people. And that's just one example of something that I need to switch over. There's something else I have that is my Google Drive, and I have all kinds of erotica on a Google Drive. I also have that backed up on my computer, so it's not as if I'm going to lose anything. But Google Drives have been deleted from people's stuff. And, you know, with some of them, that was the only place that they had it. Strictly educational, no nudity. Sex ed YouTube channels have been deleted. This is much more far-reaching than just screwing over the sex workers. So I wanted to share that little frustration. I have one more webinar on the 26th that is going to be through Eventbrite, and then Eventbrite can bite me. But I wanted to read you a little exchange I had with SparkSo. I got on SparkSo, and I asked them a couple of key questions about things that I needed, a couple of bells and whistles that were essential for me. And the guy said, yeah, we have those. And okay, points, first of all, for having a live chat operating on a Saturday. But then I asked him a bunch of different questions once I started creating the event, because learning a new platform is kind of tricky sometimes. It's difficult because it's just like a whole new thing and the learning curve is kind of steep. But let me read you this little exchange that we had at the end of things. So first I want to tell you that I was actually recommended SparkSo by Dr. Liz Powell of sexpositivepsych.com. And this is how she describes herself. As a licensed psychologist and coach, I specialize in helping you build your most fulfilling, authentic life. I teach, write, and consult on areas of sexual diversity and pleasure, non-traditional relationships, and sexual empowerment. So the other thing it says is LGBTQ, poly, non-monogamy, BDSM friendly. So she was the one who recommended that I check out SparkSo. So I'm chatting with their live chat dude on a Saturday, And, you know, we figure things out. He helps me with the stuff that I need help with. And then he says this, we appreciate it, Ruby. We'll look into what you mentioned. Please let us know if you have any questions with the system. And I said, will do. I'm another sex educator migrating from Eventbrite after their update of terms, referred by Dr. Liz Powell. He says, we love Liz, and we love Eventbrite's new terms. I hope you enjoy our system. Thank you for your support, and contact us anytime. So yeah, there's the deal. It's kind of like people are getting twitchy. They're getting a little too scared to have anything sexual at all. And it's really kind of depressing for me because, you know, I'm a sex educator. And so to watch this sort of overhanging dark cloud of censorship descend is not a fun thing. But Sparkso, you guys rock. And I'll be doing my webinars on that platform, ticketing them in the future because it works like a charm. Okay, let's check out some more letters. Question to the givers and receivers out there. Has anyone had any experience of going, quote, beyond the second sphincter, quote? Anything you can share? I put this out there to crowdsource, and I'm going to share what I know, but what I know is just a part of the crowdsourcing, right? I wanted to put it out there for everyone who listens to the podcast, because I love it when I do that, and a bunch of people write in. It contributes to the knowledge base, like I say over and over again. Here's what I know about going past the second sphincter. It needs to be done slowly, and when you push through it, you need to do it gently. If you have a feeling like it's just not going anywhere, you might want to change the angle, because at that point where that second sphincter is where it goes into the colon, and there's kind of a 90-degree turn there. You can push past it, but you may have to change the angle and try different angles a little bit, and then it might work a little bit better. There are some receivers who really can't stand the way this feels. It just feels like it's bottoming out, it's unpleasant, it kind of hurts, they don't want anything to do with it. There are others who love the feeling when it gets past that second sphincter, because what happens then is it comes to an area that's very close to the vagus nerve. And I'm going to refer you to a previous podcast, and that podcast is number 169, and I kind of did a deep dive into what the vagus nerve was all about and how incredible it is and how good it is to have it stimulated. I'm really unsure as to how to describe the sensation of a really deep penetration that does seem to stimulate the vagus nerve. Men wax poetic about it, but I can't seem to get a commonality of descriptors to give you. All I know is that the guys who enjoy it talk about it's just an amazing feeling. So please, all of you receivers and givers, if you know any more about this, about the really deep penetrations, the really long toys, write in and tell us your experience about that. And any physiological information you have is always welcome. And let's go from there. And of course, I'm going to put a link in the Linkorama for podcast number 169, and you can check that out. Okay, here's my next letter. This was from FetLife. I ran across your pegging websites and approached my husband about it, and he was game for me to start playing with his ass. Laugh out loud. We are getting our first harness soon, and since I'm a little obsessed with pegging right now, and you refer to previous podcasts a lot for repeat questions, I started listening to the early podcasts so I could get to know you and grow in your knowledge at the same time, and not skip around so much. So in the last month, I've listened to number 9 to number 72 plus, about 14 other ones, including the one for the women, and other ones that you have referenced in the last month or so. So I'm still on my Ruby Marathon, but in one of the early podcasts, you mentioned Shiri Zin harnesses, but not again, as far as I've gotten. They look sexy as fuck, but I'm curious if they're not good somehow. And what is with that ceramic? Wild, good, bad, or indifferent for newbies like us? So, here's the deal about the Shiri Zin harnesses. They still exist, and they're absolutely works of art. They're supple leather. They have this lovely satiny kind of thing that hangs down in the back that's beaded, and it's sexy as fuck. You are absolutely right. They are sexy as fuck. But when you're doing pegging, different juices and things and stuff can get different places, as with any sex equipment. So there's always the issue of keeping something clean. Something with all that beading and the satin and the leather and all of that requires quite special care. So it is a bit impractical because, you know, like I said, the fabric and the beading in conjunction with the leather just doesn't lend itself to getting really wild and certainly doesn't lend itself to cleaning. So the dildos that are available to go with these amazingly beautiful harnesses, they're ceramic, these dildos, and they're the same color as the harness, and then they have some gold decorations on them. They're really quite exquisite. But the reality of the situation is that something that hard, like ceramic, is actually too hard for most receivers. There are receivers out there who really enjoy glass dildos, but most of the time, or the stainless steel like the Pure Wand, but most of the time they like those for self-play or for partner play, but not as a strap-on. Because with a strap-on, as we all know who have tried it or seen the videos, you can get rather enthusiastic. You can fuck someone with vigor and enthusiasm. And doing that with something that hard, it just doesn't fly very well. Most of the people say it's just too uncomfortable. I mean, even if you think of the one double that I'm not wild about, the Field Dough, it's a pretty rigid silicone, and guys complain about that. Just too hard. Doesn't feel good. So yes, the combination of the two is not so good. That's the only reason that you've never heard about it again. Now, when I was answering this woman's message, I saw that she had posted a message to another group asking about beginning equipment, and she had mentioned she's a plus-size woman. So let me reiterate for the zillionth time to everyone listening, the very best harness for big, beautiful women is the Aslan Leather Minx. It has a corset back. It provides this wide band of stability that goes across the back. And it also, that corset provides one more point of adjustment. The reason I know that this is an amazing harness for big, beautiful women is because I saw a training video. I was directed there by a good friend of mine who has a body similar to the woman in this video who is a porn star. Her name is Sophia St. James. And she has this lovely huge ass and huge thighs. And the harness on her was the Aslan Leather Minx, and it fit perfectly. And she was just having a party with it with this young man. So there you go. And my friend who told me about it bought one as well, and she loves it. She said that she didn't really like the spare parts Jacques that I had recommended because the elastic didn't really lend itself to someone with big thighs, and you have these big upper thighs, and the elastic kind of cut in a little bit and just wasn't very comfortable, and she didn't like it at all. But the Aslan Leather Minx, bingo, that is the ticket. So I'm going to put a link to that in my Linkorama. And also, anybody out there who just tuned in to this podcast and is thinking about, wow, we're really interested in this pegging thing, what kind of equipment should we get? I can't tell you how often I get that question. What equipment should we get? Listen to podcast number 102. Podcast number 102 will lead you through all of the different factors that will affect what equipment you choose. And once you do that, come back to me and say, okay, we've decided we want, and then lay it out, and I will tell you where to get the best equipment. We've decided we want, for example, a fabric harness and one that is not panty style because we want to have her lady bits accessible. And, you know, she is this size and I am that size, and we would like a toy that is a little bit longer because we're both bigger people or what have you. We want something that is unrealistic. We want it curved. We want it firm silicone. We want it dual density. See how many choices you have? Listen to podcast number 102. That is going to be in the Linkorama as well. Thanks for the question, person on FetLife. It was fun to answer and fun to look at those pictures of the Shiri Zin harness. I'm going to put a link to those anyway because they're really, it's like the artistic, how do I explain this? It's like someone took something functional and made it absolutely, totally freaking beautiful, but unfortunately sacrificed a little bit of the functionality. However, the pictures are still fun to look at. In fact, I might take one of those pictures and put it up for the podcast. I think that's a great idea. So yes, that will be up there and you guys will see what I mean. They're gorgeous harnesses and not so practical. Okay, moving right along here. I had a few of you respond to the woman who wrote in podcast number 195 about her partner after receiving anal sex for the first time, receiving pegging, that he was sick and vomiting and how she was really, really concerned about it. So I threw it out there for crowdsourcing and here's what I got. Here's the first one. I just listened to 195. In regards to the guy who had pain afterwards, it may have been the position he was being pegged from. When I have received missionary pegging, if my wife doesn't hold my balls, they will both recede back into me. My first time of pegging, this happened, and when I looked down to see my nuts had disappeared, I got extremely sick. I made it to the bathroom, and I passed out. I awoke to my wife crying and slapping me awake. It almost nixed our anal play forever. I have to manually push them back out, and it doesn't feel good. From his remarks, it sounds like this may have been the culprit. Okay, thank you for that input. That is one letter that I got. Here's the next one. I was listening to episode 195, and a listener wrote in about their partner being nauseous and having a vomiting feeling during or after ejaculation. That pain reminds me of my personal experience with epididymitis. While epididymitis pain isn't limited to ejaculation, it certainly can manifest then and can even be heightened then. The good news is, if that's what the listener's partner has, a visit to a urologist and antibiotics will likely get them back on track. Below are several links that discuss the issue. And then he's got four different links. Associated symptoms can include fear, nausea, and abdominal pain. So I will put those in the Linkorama in case that helps out the person from 195. And then he signs off with hope this helps and thank you for your work. And he signs it needs new batteries. Some of these names you guys choose crack me up. And here's another one. Hi, Ruby. I was just listening to your latest episode and you shared an email about a man who experienced pain and vomiting after prostate play. I wanted to write in to say I've had something similar a few times, a feeling like what some men refer to as blue balls. It feels like someone gave you a quick kick to the balls, which can radiate to abdominal pain, and I would assume in extreme situations, vomiting. The phenomenon of blue balls is caused by an extended period of arousal without ejaculation. For me personally, I've had this happen maybe a handful of times from long periods of prostate play, particularly if it's a pegging session or a BDSM scene. During these, I will usually get hard, go soft, etc., as I have small prostate orgasms. So some of the times I've had serious hands-free orgasms, a few minutes later, I'll get that serious pain and swelling in the testicles. It's like my body forgot to tell my cock and balls we orgasmed. Still worth it. If it happens again or to anyone else, the best solution I've found is aspirin and a hot bath, which is usually quite nice after a long pegging session. Thanks for all that you do, Ruby. Keep up the good work. So those are like three different suggestions from the crowdsourcing people. Thank you so much for writing those in, gentlemen. I really appreciate it. And they're all different. So hopefully that will help out the person who wrote in, because it sounds like that was kind of scary. And the guy with the balls that disappeared sounds like that was kind of scary too. Okay, let's see. Let's move on to the next letter. Hi, my wife and I are new to pegging, and we are having trouble finding strap-ons that work well. The harnesses either don't allow her the control we're looking for, or doesn't hold the dildos in the ring correctly. Do you have any advice on what brand to buy? I've looked on many sites, and they all seem to carry the exact ones, but I've never seen the ones that we see in the porn we watch. Thanks for any help that you can give. Hope you have a great day. So, first of all, I would not shop for harnesses by watching porn. Bad idea. Because they're only wearing those for looks. They're not wearing those for functionality. Now, ideally, the equipment that you have should be a lovely combination of both. But that's not what porn is about. Porn is about appearances. Porn is about what looks good. And you may see that and think, ooh, I want one of those. But it could be a cheap harness that fits that particular porn actress really well, but it sits way too high, so it's hitting against her pubic bone. But she's not going to complain about that, and you're not going to even maybe notice that. But if you get that same harness, your wife puts it on, and presto, you've got a harness that is not comfortable. So don't shop for equipment by looking at porn movies, please. You would be perfect candidates for listening to podcast number 102, because that would give you enough information about the choices that you have so that you could come back to me and go, okay, we've decided we want this, like I just talked about a little while ago. There are definitely some excellent harness makers, and there are a whole bunch out there that are pretty poor harness makers, and it can kind of make or break your experience. I have received a whole bunch of letters from people who finally bit the bullet, spent the money, and got the really nice equipment, and they were inspired to write me. They didn't just have a good time and go, wow, that was cool, that was awesome, it was a whole lot better. They took the time to write me. They were inspired enough to write me and say, we started off with X, Y, and Z. It was okay. We had a good time. We were all right. And then we saved up and we got this equipment that you recommended. And oh my God, it is so amazing. It's so much more comfortable. It's so much more easy to use. It feels good inside me, blah, blah, blah. You get the point. There are places to buy equipment and places not to buy equipment. Let me just, as a general rule, say, please don't buy anything on Amazon. It's tempting. You can get some really good deals, but you're going to get really good deals on really bad stuff. So there you go. And it may look exactly like what I'm talking about, but likely it's a knockoff. So there's always that danger as well, because there's tons of knockoffs of sex toys on Amazon these days. So yeah, listen to podcast number 102. You'll find that in the Linkorama. Here's another letter. Hi, I noticed you post a lot about pegging, and I have a question for you. That type of anal is my fetish, and I want to explore it with my girlfriend, but I'm afraid it's something she's not into. Every time I jokingly bring it up, she shows mild disgust for it. Is it a lost cause to try and bring it up in hopes of convincing her to try it? Absolutely not. It's not a lost cause, and I really, really encourage you to do that. Here are some things you need to know before you do that. She may have all kinds of different reasons why she's having that expression of disgust, and there's no way for you to know what those reasons are. So, when you bring it up, ask her if she would please listen to podcast number 112, which will be in the Linkorama on my blog. And on that podcast, I, in my own voice, talk to women whose partners have just approached them for pegging. I go through each and every one of those misconceptions, assumptions, myths, and concerns. I give them accurate information only. One of the reasons that it's really cool is because there are a lot of things that people connect with pegging that don't necessarily have to be connected. Like if you watch pegging porn, you see all the different things that are connected every time they do professional pegging porn. The feminization, the guys are dressed up as women, the verbal and sometimes physical humiliation and degradation and abuse. What else? It looks like he's in pain, that kind of stuff. So, and then she's always dressed up as a dominatrix in some hot leather outfit, really intense. So people tend to assume that this is how you do pegging and that all those things are inextricably connected. Now, if you're into any or all of those, rock on, awesome, that's what you like, and it's totally fine. But you see where I'm going here. She might think she has to dress up. She might think you want to dress up like a woman. She might think you want her to humiliate you verbally, and you may want her to do any or all of those things with you and or to you. But what this podcast does is eliminates broaching those subjects one at a time in super scary conversations. It lays it all out there so that she knows that if she's afraid that you might want to dress up like a woman, she needs to talk to you about that. If she's concerned about you wanting humiliation, she needs to talk to you about that. It opens up the conversations and lays everything out on the table for you. So there's all kinds of concerns she could have, and it might just be that she thinks it's really dirty. Who knows? But podcast number 112, I go through all of those and I give accurate information. She may still decide that this is not something she wants to do. However, one of the coolest parts about podcast number 112, besides going through all of those potential concerns, which by themselves, one by one, can be kind of super scary conversations, is that I emphasize the relationship. You saying that you want to do this with her is a marvelous thing. You are allowing her to know your kinks and your desires. And that is a gift. It's an awesome thing. You're letting her know you a little more deeply. And I say that over and over and over again, because it really is a gift. You're trusting her enough to say, hey, I'm really interested in this. I want to try it. And that's a gift in any relationship, no matter whether she decides to do it or not. Here is the caveat. You need to listen to that podcast yourself first. It's like 50 minutes long. And you need to be the one to decide whether or not it's an appropriate thing for her to listen to. And then you can also decide if you do think it's good for her, whether you want to listen to it with her or whether you just want to give her the link and let her listen to it by herself, whatever you want to do. But I've had great success with that podcast number 112. I have not had a disaster story yet. It seems as if I've pretty much nailed it in terms of hitting the right tone with the whole thing. So that's where I'm going to send you. You will find the link for that in my Linkorama. Please do let us know how it goes. I am hopeful for you, sir. Thanks for the question. Here's one more. My wife and I have been together for 12 years. We discovered pegging together after I wanted to penetrate her anally, and she flipped the script and suggested trying it on me. I was hesitant at first, but after some time, I opened up to it, and now it has become a regular part of our sex life, and she loves it. My question is, I try and get her to show more interest in pegging outside the bedroom. She's amazing during the moment of us actually doing it. She's very enthusiastic and very much into it. But after, she doesn't put much effort into researching about it or initiating it. I'm always pushing her to explore further and show more interest into looking into new toys or harnesses to add to our collection, or educate herself about other couples doing it for anything pegging related in general, really. How can I get her to engage more or show more interest outside the bedroom? Is there some good articles she could read? We have noticed the boom of pegging sex in pop culture, whether it be TV shows or movies, which always sparks a good conversation, but I want more. I wish she would be more into it as much as I am. Maybe I'm asking too much, but just wish she was on the same page as me when it comes to her strapping on. Any advice would be great. Thank you so much. So here is the deal. I know there's guys out there that are listening to this podcast go rolling their eyes. It's like, seriously? She's enthusiastic. She straps it on. She loves doing it to you. You're both into it and you're complaining, which I have to admit was my first reaction. You have that, which is awesome with your wife. You totally have it. So I've tried to set that all aside and really hear what you're saying about how you want her to be more into it outside of the bedroom. So let's see. One of the suggestions I had was Tristan Taramino made a video. I think it's like called The Ultimate Guide to Strap-On Sex or something like that. Or no, I think it's actually called The Ultimate Guide to Pegging. And she's there teaching while these sexy actors are doing the pegging thing. And that might be something really fun. But as far as going further than that and her researching things or reading things or watching stuff or that kind of thing, I think you are asking a little bit much. I think that if you would like to bring those things up and watch them with her, read them to her perhaps, if that's something that you guys enjoy doing, that might be fun. But to expect her to just grab it up and be as enthusiastic about it in terms of research and reading and doing stuff outside the bedroom as you are, you know, she may never do that. One of the things I did notice is that you said she never initiates it. That is something that we can work on. Just tell her that. Say, you know, it would be really, really cool if sometimes you initiated it, because I love this thing. You know I love it. I love that you love it. I love that you're enthusiastic about it. And we have a lot of fun doing it. But I don't want to always be the one to ask for it. And so if you could surprise me sometimes and tell me, hey, when I get home, I'm going to fuck you, so you better be ready. Or whatever way you guys do that, and sexting and that kind of thing, that would be awesome. Or you could also work out a schedule. I've talked about schedules before, and they're kind of fun because it builds anticipation and it allows you to prepare beforehand. And, you know, the sexting and all that kind of stuff still applies. You can look at the calendar and go, wow, you know, I know she never initiates, but we've scheduled this. And so Wednesday, I'm going to get fucked, right? And that's kind of cool. You can sort of relax and know that it's awesome, as opposed to feeling a little bit uncomfortable because you're always the one that has to bring it up. I think that part of it is workable in terms of making something a little bit more comfortable for you, whether it be the scheduling, or perhaps just mention it to her, and then she will take a little bit more of a lead role in suggesting times for you to do the pegging, and she will be the one to instigate it. It might be that easy. Either of those could be a possibility, and you could even do both. But, you know, wanting her to go off and research and do all that stuff, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. It might. But you know how it is when you're really, really interested in something and enthusiastic about it, and you just go, wow, I got to check that out. Well, because it's happening in your body, maybe you're more interested in it because you are so in love with the whole pegging thing. And that's why your interest in it is more than hers. The other thing you might want to do is to do that research yourself and suggest things to her. You can be the go-between. And I know you said you don't like to initiate it all the time, but if you're the one that's all that enthusiastic about it and you find something really cool, you can say, hey, check this little video out that I found. It's an amateur porn video. And look at the position that they're doing. I want to do that with you. What do you think? So see what I mean? You can share those things with her, but yeah, I wouldn't expect her to run off and do a bunch of research. So, enjoy your pegging, sir. Thank you for the question. Okay, here's another one. Ruby, just a quick question for you. Wife and I were having a chat yesterday about the popularity of pegging. She suggested it was still pretty rare and uncommon. I differed in opinion and said that we probably know other couples who did so also. However, upon looking online, I cannot seem to find any statistics about pegging or ass play within a straight relationship. Any insight? I figure it's far more common than my wife realizes, but don't want to have skewed opinions. Thanks a ton for all your info. You are absolutely right. There are no statistics. There are no studies. I was so disappointed to see that the one decent-sized sex study about all the different things that people did in bed had anal play, but it didn't have pegging. Seriously? So yeah, I was really disappointed, but no, there are no statistics. So if I took a guess, I could be totally wrong. I mean, my opinions are quite skewed. I surround myself with sex educators. I know a lot of sex workers. I live in California, right? In my opinion, if I were to just sort of take my own personal experience and say how many people are doing pegging, oh, at least 10%, probably more, maybe even close to 15 or 20, right? But I think, because I think a lot of couples do anal play, but again, that's just me. I have no clue, sadly. And as long as you guys are doing anal play together, who cares? Thank you for writing in. I'm sorry I don't have better information for you. If anybody knows of a study that has studied that, please write in and let us know, because I would love to have the information. All right, that is it for this time. You can find my work at peggingparadise.com, where I have my blogs, my podcast, my erotica, and the forum. Pegging101.com has informational pegging articles only with no kink. My podcasts are available through a variety of podcast downloader apps, which you can find a sampling of under the tab Follow on my website for both Android and iPhones. You can also stream my podcast directly from my website if you like. The Follow tab has links for you to subscribe to my blog, follow me on Twitter, and check out my Facebook page. And remember, if you order toys from enticeme.com, please use that coupon code RIDER for 15% off of your purchase, and you will be supporting Pegging Paradise with every purchase you make. Send your questions to ruby@peggingparadise.com. No question is too simple, too silly, or too strange. Many listeners are going to learn along with you, so don't be shy. Throw those questions in my mailbox, or you can call me at 805-500-6544. That's 805-500-6544. The next webinar I have is going to be the 26th of this month, which is a Thursday night at 5:30 p.m., and that is Pacific time, California time. Clearly, all of the times I give you are going to be California time, so you have to do your own conversions. But Thursday at 5:30 p.m., I will have my next podcast. That is the 26th of April. And then I have one on May 1st at 5:30 p.m. as well. And May 1st, let me see what day of the week that is. That is a Tuesday night. So I'm going to continue to have these webinars, and I am going to keep offering the beginner's class. I'm developing the advanced class as well. And I wanted to extend an invitation to anyone who has already attended a webinar to please feel free to attend another one. Just shoot me an email and I'll tell you how to get into it. Because the more people, the better in the webinars. I'm really enjoying having more full classes. And I've grown a lot. So those people out there who took the first ones, come again and see if you can learn anything more, or to reinforce the wisdom that you got the first time, to reinforce what you learned, maybe to hear a few new things, you know, whatever. Please feel free to take the webinars again. I actually just got contacted from someone in Kansas City who wants to have sort of a screening, if you will. She said, in her kink group, there is a lot of interest in the pegging classes. And so they're going to set it up so they have a screening and a whole bunch of people are there, which is totally cool. She asked me if I could take questions, not just in the chat on the Zoom platform, but also in Facebook and Twitter. And I said, no, you know, I don't have a secretary. I don't have an assistant. I'm sorry. You're just going to have to type them all into the chat. Otherwise, my attention and my teaching will be divided because I'll have to keep checking these other things. But I'm excited at the prospect of continuing these webinars. Please do attend if you want. If you cannot afford it, it is free. You just need to shoot me an email. And for all the givers, it's free. If you'd like to make a donation for whatever you feel it's worth, that's certainly up to you. That is an option that I've taken advantage on the new SparkSo platform that you will see if you click into it. All of those links are going to be in the Linkorama. You just go to my blog, and on the right-hand side, there's just a link that says webinars, and it'll take you to the page. And the page will have all of the different ones that are scheduled. For right now, I just have those two scheduled. Please come to one of them if you can, if you want to, and spread the word for anybody else who's interested. So here we are. Thank you for downloading and listening, everyone. You all rock. Happy pegging.